thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Hi. It's John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here weekdays from 1 to 3 and Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 12 noon on social media. Boy, wait till you see my stuff on Twitter. We'll put it on my other social media sites. I'm WGN King John. Follow me on social there.
He did the monster mash. It was a great
favorite Halloween song for 200. Go.
It caught on in a flash.
Thriller?
He did the monster
mash. Thriller's got to be in everybody's top five, right? I mean, really, best dance, best artist. It was so much fun when it first came out. Still works.
The ghouls all came.
But how can you? How can you listen to this and not want to do the monster mash?
They did the monster mash.
I like Hocus Pocus, the song Come Little Children from Hocus Pocus.
Don't know that, but we'll sample that.
I like Spell on You.
They did the monster
Don't know that. Spell on You.
The zombies
were having fun.
Kim, did you say yours is going to be Michael Jackson?
I can't even think of one. I'm blanking. Somebody must have put a spell on me.
And his son. The scene was rocking.
Yeah, so happy Halloween to everybody. What a lovely day we have for it. The sun is shining downtown Chicago. I hope it is where you are, too. By the way, because it is this, it just seems like the leaves changed late this year. We're doing the hashtag Pretty Leaf Contest. Only started it yesterday, and I got about 50 pictures right away on my Facebook page of people posting pictures of pretty leaves. And I'm telling you, it is art. You people are not only seeing beautiful things, but you're taking really creative, gorgeous pictures. I'm WGN King John on Facebook, and there's like this thread. And, you know, folks are really good with their cameras and their camera phones these days. But wow, it's not just pretty leaves. Some of you have a reflection, and some of them the leaves are floating in water, and some of them kids are buried in a pile of leaves, and it just goes on and on and on.
Don't you think in the past week everything has just gotten so vibrant, it's gorgeous?
It really has just popped. And the rain last night in my neighborhood knocked some of the leaves down. So it looks like, you know, enjoy it while you can because it's not here that long. By the way, many of the members of the staff here at WGN Radio today, dressed in Halloween costumes, there's a little Halloween party luncheon going on right now. And that's really nice. Folks are all dressed up. Hi, Marcia. Are you one of the pink ladies, one of the pinkies, or whatever they call them?
Yes, I'm one of the, what do you call them? Elf.
Pink ladies.
The pink ladies from Greece.
Yes.
You got the pink jacket on. Yes, yes, yes. Very nice. She's turning around, showing it to me. Nice to see you. I haven't seen you in a while.
I miss you.
Welcome back. So a lot of the staff's dressed up as the pink ladies and members of the cast from Greece and all kinds of things.
Even Steve Bertrand was dressed as a Grease character?
No, he was not.
Yeah, he changed. He only did it for one picture.
Steve Bertrand did?
Mm-hmm. He had a white Hanes shirt, a leather jacket, his jeans.
I did not see that.
It was a sight.
Are you sure that was Steve?
It was. And then the next thing I saw him cross the corner, I'm like, Steve, you're back in your plaid button-up?
Steve does not like dressing up for Halloween. I'll be honest with you. I don't either.
Oh, really?
If there's a fun thing and everybody's doing it, like you guys on the Rokan show will do that a lot. You'll all get dressed up and into something. Judy Pilak is fun. And one of our managers here, Stephanie, is insane for this sort of thing. But then some of us are decidedly not. And it's a real effort.
I mean, you can at least get like a cape or a mask or
it feels
some ears.
It's weird. I don't know what it is. I mean, I was making fun of Steve's feelings about this, but I have a little bit of that too. And then you really feel ostracized very quickly when everybody's doing the fun thing and you can't find that bone.
I don't feel ostracized. I'm happy in my skin.
Okay. I mean, I'm happy in my skin, too, but I still like to dress like a little pig on Halloween.
You totally did. In fact, your picture, along with that of about 13 other members of the staff, are on my Twitter account right now. I'm WGN King John on Twitter. Look for me there. And there's simply, I work with these people, one, I work with these people, two, three, and four, montages. And you'll see the staff, Lou Manfredini, the giant Lou Manfredini in the giant bear costume. And Stephanie as, I don't know what the name of the character is from Grease.
That's Sandy.
The Olivia Newton-John character.
Sandy.
And on it goes. So if you want to see what a fun Halloween staff looks like, at least we got that. And then, and by the way, they're sitting at a long conference table in the middle of a common work area we have is Walter Jacobson, who went as a slightly older newsman.
And he is really nailing
it. He's pulling it off. You go, Walter. What an honor it is to work with Walter every day. And he's busy. He doesn't have time to be messing around with costumes. Yesterday's news click at WGNradio.com. Producer Elif, will you be able to give us that and the results? We said we'd get to it early. Let's get to it now.
President Trump wants to end birthright citizenship. A, good idea, 12%. B, no, 88%.
I'm surprised it's 12%. 12% of you said that this is a good idea. Exclamation point. President Trump wants to end birthright citizenship. The big question is, does he have the right to do it? He told some interviewers from Axios that he can. It's been vetted by his counsel, whatever that means. And that they say he can do it by executive order. Everybody thinks you got to have a congressional act or you've got to have a constitutional amendment, but you don't. We've looked into it. I don't know who's looked into it for him, but most folks who've looked into it have said that you can't do it. So here is Jeff Stone. What I'll play for you is just a brief clip from yesterday's show. Jeff Stone is a constitutional law professor at the University of Chicago. So we reached out to him on a couple of issues, and this was one of them. First, you'll hear Trump stating what you now know, that he thinks he can do it, and the professor's reaction to it.
Now, how ridiculous. We're the only country in the world where a person comes in, has a baby, and the baby is essentially a citizen of the United States for 85 years with all of those benefits, and it has to end.
Have you talked about that with counsel?
Yeah, I have.
So where in the process?
It's in the process. It'll happen.
Sounds like he knows something you and I don't.
No, it sounds like he doesn't know anything. This is really not controversial. This is an absolute open and shut black and white question.
Do you have any colleagues at the U of C? Could I find somebody that will give me a credible argument the other way?
I doubt it, honestly.
It's Jeff Stone over at the University of Chicago. Even Paul Ryan, who, you know, has the difficult job. This is just going to how he remembers his last term. Of trying to still be a Republican and support this president, but sometimes pick up the pieces. And Paul Ryan has, of course, said that you just can't do that. We read the Constitution, the same one he's reading, and it's just not there. And if you read the 14th Amendment, you'll see it is pretty clear as well. But one of you texted to us this, and I say all of that to get to this point. After Professor Stone left us yesterday, somebody texted in and said, the key to the 14th Amendment is the phrase, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, right? The 14th Amendment begins Section 1 this way. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and the state wherein they reside. So when clever people like me shorten it and want to make a point, we say all persons born in the United States are citizens of the United States. That's the first sentence, but that's an abbreviated version of it. The first sentence is all persons born or naturalized to the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and the state where they reside. So one of you said, John, the key to the 14th is the phrase, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Non-citizens are not under jurisdiction, and therefore they have no birthright. I don't know. And the professor was gone, so we sent him that line, that text, and asked him to respond. And here is his full response. As the Supreme Court made clear in its 1898 decision in the United States versus Wong Kim Ark, the phrase, subject to the jurisdiction thereof, was intended to exclude from American citizenship children born to diplomats who are physically in the United States, but who are not, by virtue of their diplomatic status, subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. It did not refer to children born in the United States to undocumented aliens, who are clearly subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. Maybe that's the same thing as if you double park your car in Washington, D.C., and you're a diplomat, we can't do anything about it. If your Turkish guards beat up a bunch of people at a demonstration or at an event in Washington, D.C., they might not be subject to prosecution in the United States because they have diplomatic immunity, something that happens in their embassy. And so a child born to diplomats here would not be, I think that's the way I'm reading this, an automatic citizen of the United States, because they would not be subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. But the professor says undocumented aliens clearly are. So I don't know where the president's coming on all of this. But there was this piece in the New York Times, and it's by Peter Baker, and I won't read it all to you, but it just makes this interesting point. He writes, for the first, there was the middle-class tax cut that even his allies and many of his aides had not heard about. And then there were troops dispatched to the border to counter an invasion of our country.
Just to clarify, that middle tax class cut was something like 10 days ago, 10% for the middle class.
Yeah, 10% right. Tax cut not for the middle class.
Not the big tax cut that went through.
Yeah, fair enough. And the point about that was that we're going to get right on that. Well, first of all, Congress was in recess, and they hadn't heard about it. There are no plans for an additional 10% middle class tax cut. But the president said, oh, we're going to do that. And nobody really knew what that was. And then you have the troops dispatched to dispel this invasion by these impoverished migrants who are about 900 miles and a few weeks away at best. And then Tuesday, President Trump declared that he would sign an executive order essentially rewriting the Constitution. It has been traditionally interpreted to stop children of undocumented immigrants from automatically becoming citizens. Baker writes, Mr. Trump seems to be throwing almost anything he can think of against the wall to see what might stick, no matter how untethered from political or legal reality. Within hours of his promise to end birthright citizenship, Republicans were denouncing the idea or distancing themselves from it. Paul Ryan said, I'm a believer in following the plain text of the Constitution, and it's pretty clear you cannot do that. It's obvious you cannot do that, said Speaker Ryan. This is one of those cases where people say, well, this is Trump's strategy. I don't think he has a strategy. I honestly don't even think he thinks that by doing this, it will distract us from other things that are problematic for him. I just think if you think about it, if the election were 2 months ago or 10 months ago, you would have had three or four crazy things that were also distractions. He's been doing this since before he got elected. This is, you know, the way it goes these days. So, yeah. The biggest mystery to me, though, about this citizenship, birthright citizenship thing, is that we really weren't talking about that. I don't know how or why that was even on his mind, but clearly it was, and clearly he wants to do it, and it sure doesn't look like he can. Lots of texts about this Trump thing. John Rokon said yesterday that law was first written for slaves. It was. Professor covered that with us yesterday, too. From 630, John, Trump knows he cannot change the law by executive order. He's just trying to rally his political base. 480, you make it sound like ending birthright citizenship is for everyone. The proposed change was for illegals only. He hasn't written much about this proposed change. I'm not exactly sure who it's for. In the original soundbite from that Axios interview, Elif, can you play the first part of it for us and does he identify who he's talking about?
Now, how ridiculous. We're the only country in the world where a person comes in, has a baby, and the baby is essentially a citizen of the United States for 85 years with all of those benefits. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And it has to end.
Have you talked about that with counsel?
Yeah. I have.
So where in the process?
It's in the process. It'll happen.
Yeah, he doesn't say it's the illegals. Remember that if you were here working on a green card, if you were a tourist, not a U.S. citizen, and you have a child in the United States, that child is a U.S. citizen by birthright, by being born here.
Can I give you a tell, I think, I've noticed from the president? When he repeats words from the question... No, I mean this.
A lot of us do that. That's you loading up an answer.
But it also shows that that's him on thin ice. When the guy said, well, where is it in the process? He goes, it's in the process. I think that's a tell.
That he
take
hasn't
it for whatever
thought
you want.
Through?
That he's kind of vamping. Yeah. It's like when someone says a lot of people say.
What was the number you said yesterday, Steve, of children who are born?
I think it was 200.
300,000?
No. It was the two illegals, it was 230,000 or 270,000, 7% of all births. It's a big number.
Okay. So here's another problem. Say you just took the illegals and not those maybe who are the children of parents who are here legally. Boy, here's just another administrative nightmare. We can't get our hands around the illegal alien problem we have in this country to begin with. But now imagine tackling this, finding them, what are you going to do about it, etc. But suppose we were able to identify all those children living here as U.S. citizens who now aren't U.S. citizens, right? So they have the advantage, and not just children, adults. What are we going to do with the hundreds of thousands of people who are citizens now and are about to lose theirs? Or do we grandfather them in and just say, okay, starting Monday, anybody born that way?
I don't think you could retroactively take someone's citizenship. Well, I mean,
you can do whatever you want.
Unless it's in the process.
You can do whatever you want. John, no one is talking about Trump saying that we are the only country with that birthright, but that's not true. And a lot of people have been talking about that. It's a few dozen countries in the world.
It's like 70.
Canada and Mexico, to name two nearby.
Well, they are mostly in our hemisphere. And so why do you suppose it is, John? I wonder if it's because of
United States.
Colonization and things like that, that we are the newer areas dealing with citizenship?
I have no idea.
I don't either. I'm making it up, but it's in the process.
Is that what we do now?
Yeah.
Hey, Steve, did you clean out the garage? You said you were going to clean out the garage.
I did say I was going to clean out the garage, and it's in the process.
A lot of people say we should clean out the garage.
A lot of people say that.
It's in the process.
Since you went away, the days grow long.
Hashtag pretty leaf contest.
And soon I'll hear old winter song. But I miss you most of all, my darling. When autumn leaves start to fall, autumn leaves.
Hashtag pretty leaf contest on social media. My Facebook page is filled with, I mean, there's one post, but so many comments from people posting pictures of beautiful autumn leaves.
Did Sharon win?
And Steve Bertrand actually did post finally the picture that his wife raked a heart-shaped bunch of leaves in their backyard.
Accidentally. She just was raking.
She's such a good, you know.
She's just so artistic, she can't help it.
And just loving, positive person that when she rakes the leaves, a lot of us it's just like a pile or a line. But Sharon incidentally puts it into a heart.
It's better. Last year she spelled out, help me with the leaves. So.
In case a passing drone or something would
exactly
rescue her.
Exactly right. We're right in the flight pattern, so.
Phil Vitel, the restaurant critic for the Tribune, on in about 60 seconds. Last batch of texts. Actually, I'm just getting so many texts about this. I'll just read a few. John, Google birth tourism. People come to the United States and Canada to give birth to citizens. I understand they do. John, I think if your parents are legal immigrants, you should get citizenship. But if you look it up, you'll see 300,000 anchor babies born last year, mostly in California. I understand that to be the case, too. Listen, if we all, you know the problem with this? It's not, is it a great policy that we have? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. The problem with this conversation is that the president thinks he can by himself change it. That's the argument. People aren't arguing, rightly or wrongly, about should children born in the United States automatically be U.S. citizens. They're arguing whether or not the president can just with one of those big, you know, Ed McMahon-sized checks of his with the big signature, one of those great big bill signing things of his, or executive order, can he just, by virtue of that, change the law or rule in this country? And he cannot. It would require a constitutional amendment, to which some of you said, hey, we've done that before. How did we repeal the Prohibition Amendment? Well, that was done, I don't know, look it up. Was that a constitutional amendment? I don't know how we did it. But, I mean, I'm not saying it can't be done. And I'm not even saying that it makes sense, the policy we have. The conversation today is about the fact that the president thinks he has that kind of power. John, the embassy land is considered to be foreign soil. That's why they're not subject to the laws of the United States. John, I think if your parents are legal, birthright, John, so if we do not have early voting, they would not be able to see. By the way, Steve, this is about what you were saying the other day. If we did not have early voting, they would not be able to see about the discrepancy that's going on in Texas. Supposedly, machines are flipping the votes to Ted Cruz, even if that isn't the person that the individual voted for.
Supposedly?
I don't know about that. I shouldn't have read that. Your Honor, please strike that from the record.
Right,
I don't know.
That's one of those things.
That's one of those things that's out there, and now you may think that has currency. I'm putting no weight behind it. And, Your Honor, I'd like that. We'll delete that from the podcast.
So we're creating a list here. It's in the process, and supposedly. Those are two things to avoid.
Those are red flags. Phil Vitale writes about the restaurant scene for the Chicago Tribune, and he's on line 7. Hi, Phil. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm fine, thank you.
I know you're not 100%, but you're enough of a percent to join us on the phone. Is that correct?
Right, yeah. Staying a little close to home today. A little herpy. It'll keep me off the Halloween candy.
So that means pot pies, right? You'll be reviewing pot pies for us?
Right, yeah. I'll be reviewing ginger ale and toast.
Chilling tales from the walk-in cooler. An appropriate Halloween topic. Restaurant pros share funny, scary stories from behind the line. So you went to some of the restaurateurs of Chicago and said, okay, what was the worst thing that happened to you in the restaurant, huh?
Yeah, I asked them for cute stories, see, because this is just one of those rare times in which my food and dining section comes out on Halloween Day, and the juxtaposition was just too cute to pass up.
Can I read a couple of them?
Please.
John Shields, chef, co-owner, Smith and the Loyalist. We recently had an older gentleman with a much younger lady who we would have to assume were new friends for the evening. As the night wore on, the groping became much more palpable until at one point she went into the bathroom only to have him follow her in. Trouble is they didn't lock the door. Another guest walked in on them. They jumped out, quickly paid the bill, and left with three courses left to go. Boy, that's embarrassing. Come on, people.
I would think. And also, I don't know. I'm trying to wrap my head around the appeal of such a stunt.
Well,
like at what point you say, you know what would be awesome? Before the dessert arrives?
I'm public displays of affection. Here are the rules for restaurants. Tell me if you agree with this, Phil. When you're sitting there and the other couple or parties come, you can bust the ladies. Oh, hey, you're here. And you all stand up and you shake and hug and kiss on the cheeks.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's about it.
I think that's about it, too.
I don't think you get to grope, even if it's consensual, during the meal.
Especially when it's mutual. I mean, then you got a double grope, and that's fun for exactly two people. Groper and gropey, possibly.
Scott Worsham, co-owner of MFK and Bar Biscay, said, while working at a well-respected restaurant in Sonoma, California, that no longer exists, a man and a woman with the air of two divorcees on their first date are seated. By the way, I've gone to some restaurants that are hot with the 40, 50-year-old crowd who are mm-hmm. single. And it's so cute / icky. Because it's a little like high school again. They're there with their boyfriends, and there's a bunch of girls, or there's some guys, and they're kind of looking at the other table or the other people at the bar, and everybody's got on their hippest outfits, even though we're not really that hip anymore. But there you are. I what are you going to do? I salute the confidence of or the courage of these people to go out and do it. But at the same time, it just looks funny. I'll say that.
Well, I just see people doing best foot forward on a Thursday evening. So, but at the same time, how can you not appreciate the effort?
Totally. So a man and woman are there on their first date. They're seated. He peruses the wine list, and I ask if I can assist him with a selection. He declines with a wave of his hand, as if he knows all about wine, and please don't insult me reaction. Upon my return, he requests a bottle of the corkage, pronouncing the word with a French accent. I presume he's saying corkage.
I'm almost positive he said I'll try the corkage.
it takes me a second to realize that he is ordering the corkage fee, the cheapest thing on the list. But that's the fee you pay for bringing your own bottle.
Yeah, that's right.
With a straight face. So now what are you going to do if you're the waiter, right? This guy's already kind of snubbed you. So you could really diss on him and embarrass him, or you can do what this guy did. With a straight face, I politely inform him that I'll have to check on our availability of that wine. And then I go have a very solid laugh with the kitchen crew. And then I return and suggest our most inexpensive bottle on the list, to which he haughtily replies, "That will be fine." I have been known to occasionally now say corkage out loud for no reason.
Absolutely.
Because he's looking at that, it's like $98, $124. Oh, here's one, $25. We'll try the corkage.
Exactly. Now, I will say in some parts of in California, since you're in the middle of wine country, you can very well run into places in which the corkage fee is pretty close to the price of a bottle.
Really?
It's one of those things that restaurants don't enjoy having people bring in their own wines, but especially out in wine country or in places like Chicago or New York, you will have people who are actual collectors, serious collectors, and they have wonderful wines that aren't even on this restaurant's wine list, which is sort of the line that's drawn. If you're bringing in something nice that we don't even have, fine. But if you're just, if you want to pay the corkage fee and you're showing up with it, there's a kangaroo on the label. Nothing against kangaroos, but maybe that's not the wine you should be trying to pop open at a nice restaurant.
Plus, it's just such a profit center for the restaurants, right? I mean,
it is.
Alcohol
that's what keeps restaurants going. If everybody walked into steakhouses the next 2 weeks and ordered nothing but steaks, no sides, no alcohol, no nothing, we would be out of steakhouses within a month.
Sorry, Zernich Worsham, the co-owner of MFK and Bar Biscay, said, "I once had to go into the men's room at a fundraiser after a party to politely ask a very famous English chef to refrain from doing lines of cocaine on the back of the toilet. He had been in there for over an hour, snorting loudly for all to hear." All right. Carol Wallach, former chef and owner of Sola, said, "We ran out of..." Oh, I'm not going to read that one just because of time, but I wanted to get to the one where the Rochelle Ibarola, is that how you say it? The general manager at Arami. "It was Friday, the 7th of October, 2016, 8:11 p.m. We had a full house of diners, over 80 guests, when the staff and probably diners started to smell smoke but couldn't find the source. In the kitchen, employees poked at the ceiling tiles, thinking an electrical issue was at hand. Still couldn't find it. At this point, I called the firemen. When they arrived, I addressed the dining room full of guests. 'Hi, guys. Can I have your attention? Unfortunately, we'll need to evacuate the building.' As soon as these polite words were out of my mouth, a fireman with a hatchet comes from behind yelling, 'Everybody out!' The firemen immediately start to rip up the walls, hacking away like The Shining. True to Chicago style, the diners carried their drinks." Okay, first, but I'm getting my alcohol. "And they grabbed the last pieces of sushi, whether from their plate or not, as they walked outside." Yeah, what a nightmare for the restaurant there, huh?
I love the part where she's trying to gently saying, "Now what we'll need to do is walk out," and then the fire guy, wasting no time, screams, "Everybody out." And when I replay that story in my mind, the fireman has Chris Tucker's voice.
All right, so how does that sound, Phil?
I can't do a very good Chris Tucker, but it's like, "Get out! Everybody out!"
I think you can do a pretty good Chris Tucker. John Hogan, executive chef.
Now my throat hurts.
At River Roast, which is where we spent a fair amount of money having my son's wedding and reception. When I was at Everest, Jean Joho, did I do that right?
Mm-hmm.
Did not want me to cook at all. So when I was at Everest, Joho, is he the owner of the place?
Chef and owner, yes.
Did not want me to cook at all. He wanted me to watch, taste the food, and make sure the cooks are tasting the food. So I'm telling them, taste your dressings, taste the cauliflower fondant, taste everything to make sure they're good. Stop right there. So that's what they do back in the kitchen, huh? Everything on my
plate? At a good
plate,
place, sure.
Really? You know, you watch these cooking shows, you see them do that. And until there were cooking shows, I didn't know that they were sticking their finger in the soup or dishing into the sauce or whatever and trying it. It seems...
Well, a good chef will starts his rounds. He's got about 16, 17 spoons in his top pocket. And it's dip a spoon, taste, into the dirty dish pile.
I see.
Another spoon, taste, move it along.
I guess so. If you don't double dip, we're all okay here.
Exactly. I followed a chef around doing just exactly that. And his first stop was by the cutlery, and he grabbed a fistful of spoons and just taste tossed.
A few days later, Joho and I walked into the kitchen, and one cook, really a big guy, is holding a service spoon loaded with Ocetra caviar. Mm-hmm. Oh, caviar. And Joho yells, "What do you think you're doing?" And he says, "Well, they told me to eat caviar every day."
He's tasting. You got to give him that. He's tasting.
That's the way it goes. That's online. Chilling tales from the walk-in cooler. Restaurant pros share funny, scary stories from behind the line. It's Phil Vitel online at thechicagotribune.com/dining section. Stay well, Phil, and we'll visit with you again another day, my friend.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Always a pleasure to talk to, see, and read him. How are we doing on the news click there, Producer Olive? What are the results, please?
President Trump wants to end birthright citizenship. A, good idea, 12%. B, no,
I know.
88%, John. System malfunction.
Yeah, no kidding. Remember Dave Stewart, who used to do news on this very fine radio station, WGN Chicago? He retired not that long ago from another station in town, but I'll always think of Dave as a newsman and force and voice here, and a friend. And the guy that told me, oh, you need to do that Bright Side. Dave is the grandfather of the Bright Side from Fridays. And he tweeted yesterday, you know how this is so true. He said, you know how sometimes when you revisit someplace you haven't been since you were much younger, and everything seems smaller somehow, and you wonder, is it me? Is my memory a lie? And the whole experience is unsettling and dissatisfying. That's how I feel about this year's McRib. You didn't see that coming, did you?
I totally thought he was going to talk about election coverage.
No, I was thinking, what, Dave? I've had these feelings. Right. I have these feelings. I could tell you my feelings along these lines. The Little League baseball field I used to play in. Go back to the field you played at when you were a kid and look at the home run fence, and that seems such a reach. And now you go, oh my gosh, what's changed? I've literally had that feeling a couple of times at a couple of fields from my Pony League and Little League days. Thank you, Dave. Yeah, the McRib's always a disappointment.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Hi!
Here's John Williams.
Happy Halloween! It's John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio, downtown Chicago. It's lovely here. I hope you're having a nice day, enjoying the autumn leaves, getting ready for trick-or-treating. It's going to work out okay today, isn't it? On social media, look for us at WGN King John. Are you doing a segue here, Ms. Harris?
Little children, I'll take thee away into a land of enchantment. Come, little children, the time's come to play here in my garden of magic.
What are we listening to here?
This is Sarah Jessica Parker singing in Hocus Pocus.
What is In Hocus? That's the name of a song in Hocus Pocus, or is that a play or something? I'm sorry, I don't know.
Is that the Bette Midler movie?
Hocus Pocus is a movie about three witch sisters, and Sarah Jessica Parker plays one of them. Bette Midler is another one.
And Susan Sarandon, was it?
I don't know her name.
Somebody else. Oh, so you know the movie too, huh?
Glinda? Yeah, and the kids used to watch it, but I didn't realize it was a musical.
And there's...
No, it's the only song in the movie.
And I Put a Spell on You.
We knew that.
I'll put a spell on you.
That's in that movie as well?
Mm-hmm.
I finished last night the 10-part series, by the way, The Haunting of Hill House.
Mm.
Have you all watched that?
No, I need to start something. I'm watching something I don't like.
A friend of...
So as soon as I finish it...
Jeannie, one of the sales gals here at WGN Radio, and her husband sat down to watch it. During the day, with the lights on, you know, as in their home, as safe as an environment as you can imagine to watch a scary show. And she was not able to get through the first episode. She said, "That's it, I'm out." And
but it's not like jump out of the closet scary, right? Is it mental scary? Or?
Oh, it's all of that. You're right, Steve. It's not slasher, horror, a monster jumps out behind the curtains. But there's plenty of instances where as the camera slowly pans out, there's a floating man in the background. You know, and it's coming towards you.
Maybe not for me.
Yeah, forget it. There not was happening.
There was a scene last night in episode 10. I'm not going to give away anything, trust me, but there's a scene where the father and son go back to the haunted house, and the father knows that it's haunted, and the son, who's written books about the haunted house, but doesn't really believe it. He thinks it's the family lore, or he's in some sort of denial. So they're back there in the haunted house. Father believes, son may not. And the floating man comes up, and it's in front of them. But the son doesn't see it just now. And the father says, "Look at me." And the son looks at him, and he says, "Keep looking at me, keep looking at me." He doesn't want the son to see the horror of the floating dead man who's in front of them. And the floating dead man leans his face into the son's, and he's inches away. And the father says, "Keep looking at me." And the son knows to look at the father, because there's something he doesn't want to see 90 degrees away. How hard it would be, how tempting it would be to just take a little peek, which is the way I watch scenes like this anyway. I'm kind of looking at the corner of the living room, looking at the curtains. Huh, we've got curtains over here. I'll just grab a glance over here at the corner of my eye and see what's happening on the television.
So that seems like a pretty key scene in the last episode.
But I didn't give anything away.
Okay. You know, I don't think I've said this on the air, but I don't believe in ghosts at all.
Yeah.
And I had an experience in England. Did I say this?
You've told me off the air, and I've always wondered about it and forgotten to
I like this story. Tell
about it.
So we were at a hotel in Oxford, you know, a building hundreds of years old. And this, and I was in a, not the basement level, but the sub first floor. So, you know, it was we weren't up at all. And we were sleeping, you know, on this WGN trip. And a couple times I rolled over at night and I would look up and to the corner of the room, and there was this mirror, like this full length mirror. And there was a round sort of sphere, a ball there, not brightly lit, but it was there. And like, that was weird. And then so a couple times, it happened to me three times during the night without trying. A couple times I woke up and had the wherewithal to try to recreate it, and I'd look over and it wasn't there. So it wasn't always there. And I just thought it was a kind of an odd optical illusion, but it was reflected in this mirror. And I got up in the morning and there wasn't a mirror there.
Oh no.
It was an eye trick. It was a door frame. It was the corner of a door.
So I told him
that looked like a mirror to me.
It was a portal.
Yeah.
So and I do not believe in ghosts. So the next morning I get up and I'm talking to the people at the desk. I'm like, "Hey, this something really weird happened to me last night." Because like I said, when I tried to recreate it, it was that sphere was never there. I said,
and the mirror was never there.
And the mirror wasn't there, but a door frame was. So you could think, you know, understand that confusion.
Yeah.
And I said, "Has anyone ever, I hate to say this, talked about ghosts or anything in this building?" And there was a man and a woman there, and the guy goes, "Yeah." He goes, "You know, the guy who works overnights says he sees things in the hallway."
Should we just confront our fears of ghosts? Maybe that'll make them go away, our fears.
You got that too?
Knock on wood, I've never seen one that I know of.
So in my car, when I drive, I have one of those sensor things when you're approaching something too quickly and you have to stop before you hit it. It goes off pretty frequently, but sometimes it goes off for no reason.
Yeah.
And I always, when it happens, I'm like, "Oh, I just ran over a ghost."
A ghost.
Because something set it off, but there's nothing actually in front of me.
That's a nice premise for kind of a scary story. You know, why is it going beep, beep, beep? There's nothing there, but it's yours is a paranormal sensor, not just a normal sensor.
Yeah, and then I get the chills, and I'm like, ooh.
Nice, nice.
I just think that ghosts the ones that don't. My mom always said the ghosts that don't scare you are the good ghosts or the good spirits. And I mean, knock on wood again, I've never seen one, but what are ghosts going to do to you if you see them?
Well,
why don't you ask that one sitting next to you right now?
Very funny.
She looked.
She did.
I did not. I looked at you.
She totally looked.
She kind of looked.
I looked at you. I'm pointing at you.
Yeah, I know.
Did you feel that little finger on your back?
My fear is not for Frankenstein or ETs or I don't know. I'm trying to think of the things that we've all been scared by at scary movies. But the thing that does kind of scare me are the movies that play with the devil stuff. Because, you know, if you believe in God, then you believe in the devil. And if you believe in the devil, then, you know, isn't it possible that the devil is, you know, coming to us somehow, either through a shape or a dog or something, you know, that there's that evil spirit and the source of it is the devil. And that's the stuff that I go, I don't need to really go here.
Should we break?
With my entertainment dollar.
See, I'm afraid of the, and I mean this, I don't know how to say this fully respectfully, but the insane. Those were the scary people that used to get me, and I don't think we make those movies as much anymore.
No. Why? Because we're being respectful of that? It's not PC to say that the crazy people... Because the scariest movie of all is The Shining, and that's Jack Nicholson's character completely losing his mind, right?
Yeah, but I think, you know, the people who are like, they seem in control, but they're in...
Like Silence of the Lambs?
Maybe.
But in the case of... Although, yeah, that's a guy who's lost his marbles, too. But in the case of The Shining... I can watch that 1,000 times over because that's a psycho scary movie. The man has lost his mind. This is the visions that he has, and so none of that's going to get me, right? Because I'm okay. And isn't that the greatest scary movie of all time? Is The Shining?
Yeah, but it's the person sitting next to you on the L who seems normal, and then you know,
here's Johnny. By the way, we were at the hotel that inspired The Shining. Do you know about this? There's a hotel
in Colorado.
Yeah, in Colorado. And you go there and it's this big old hotel with long wooden walkways and things like that. And who wrote The Shining? Not Stephen King. Was it Stephen King? Whoever wrote it.
I know.
Elif, find out who wrote The Shining.
I know I interviewed the woman, right? There was a woman who wrote the screenplay.
Who wrote The Shining? Is it Stephen King? Stephen King.
Yeah, it's but then a woman wrote the screenplay.
Well, evidently,
Moline or something.
He was inspired to write the movie when he was staying at that hotel. The hotel is not a replica of it, but they did do this. They planted a sort of hedgerow maze in the back so that when you go down the grand steps and out into the yard, you can do a hedgerow maze, which is also featured in the movie The Shining. King John, I freaked out just seeing a commercial. I was born in Germany. There is no Halloween, but there have been something before, but they have something before Easter, and I was 7 years old, and to this day it freaks me out. Etta. Okay, Adam, not exactly sure what that's all about, but thank you. My greatest fear is Trump will win a second term. John is the king of all spoilers. I am not. I did not spoil that movie or TV series for you. Seriously, John, says 312, I'm watching that series, so knock it off. Stop telling us about scenes in The Haunting of Hill House.
What was the last thing you remember from the show?
Should I tell you if it has a happy ending or a sad
ending?
What's
the biggest shocker?
No, I'm not going to
You didn't see this coming.
Okay, thanks for your call. Oh, well, by the way, Ella said that Ken has a ghost story for us. Hey, Ken, you're on WGN Radio. Hello.
Hi, I'm going to tell you about an experience I experienced when I was in my 20s in California. I was in a back house that was surrounded by a large stone wall about 6 feet high. And I was sitting on a bed in the bedroom one day talking to a friend on the phone, leaning against the wall. And this happened to be the wall that faced the fence. And the wall started to bulge. Just like in the original Haunting, the wall started to bulge and bam, bam, bam was flexing inches to the point to where I was pushed off the wall. And I told my friend, I don't know what's going on. I'm freaking out. And it I stood back and the wall was flexing.
That's pretty crazy.
And I was scared to death. I went outside and I looked at the wall outside. No marks, no nothing, nothing. The next day when I came home from work, that 6-foot wall had fallen against, that 6-foot fence had fallen against that wall.
Hmm. What do you think happened there?
I don't know, but that was pretty, that's about the scariest experience I've had in my life.
Not to get all Lou Manfredini on you, but were there any interior pipes? Was there like a hot water or cold water pipes running inside that wall?
No.
Yeah. Well, then clearly it was
possessed. This wall was physically flexing. Ooh. Like the door was in the original Haunting. It was the most frightening thing you can imagine. I have no idea what caused that.
I don't either. Hey, Ken, I'm glad you made it, though. Thanks for the call.
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
Bye.
It's Halloween, it's Halloween, it's time for scares, it's time for screams.
Scary
it's
stuff.
It's Halloween, it's Halloween.
Da-da-da-da. Saxophone solo. All together now.
Why, even Dracula will be there. It's time for games, it's time for fun. Not for this one, but for everyone.
Sorry.
So close. One day.
What would Halloween be without our favorite Shags Halloween song?
Happier.
10 times better.
I would put on a costume.
You weren't here and we were talking about the fact, did you really dress up in a costume today?
Well, I kind of was directed to. I just had to put on a leather jacket and look like I was in Greece.
Yeah, right, sure. A lot of people are dressed up. That's kind of one of the themes working up and down the halls of WGN Radio today.
Is that Ro? Are you Ro?
Somebody's walked into the newsroom. You can't tell who it is. That's a good costume.
It's Ro? It is Ro. Oh, my God.
Who is he?
He's the Hulk.
And well, yeah.
Honestly, I don't see it. Maybe it's because it's the Hulk. I don't know, but I just wow, that was pretty scary right there. But I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't like so I put one on because there were newsroom pictures of us being in Greece.
Yeah, and right.
Yeah, it's just not for me.
WGN Radio staff is pretty much dressed up today. Not everybody. Walter Jacobson isn't because he's a real journalist. Steve Bertrand isn't either, although he copped to it momentarily. I've posted pictures of a lot of them on my accounts. I'm WGN King John on Insta, Facebook, and Twitter. The Twitter feed's maybe the easiest way to do it. If you're on Twitter, just look for it, and you'll see people I work with. They're all listed there. Do we put those on Facebook, too, Ms. Garris? Are they over there as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh.
Good to see.
I'm just trying to scare you.
There is a new card game out for people who take public transportation in Chicago. The creators of it are going to join us. This may be on your holiday gift list, especially if you know somebody who rides the L. I don't even know the name of the game. Is it called the L?
Loop.
Oh, it's called Loop. Yeah, sure. Well, there it is. So, no, the Loop, the L stands for elevated, not Loop. But anyway, the name of the game is Loop.
The name of the game, yeah.
Is Loop. And the creators are going to come by, and we'll talk a little bit about the game and the experience of riding the L in Chicago. Lots of texts continue to pour into the show, some about Halloween, but mostly about the president and birthright citizenship. If you want to continue to text, go ahead. I will share some of your texts before we're done. 312-981-7200. And these texts about scary things at Halloween. John, the scariest movie of all time is The Exorcist because it's a true story. John, I watched The Blair Witch Project in my mid-20s and could barely go outside after dark for about 6 months by myself. Blair Witch either totally worked or didn't work for you at all. John, that hotel you went to in Denver was the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, Colorado. Yes, it was. John, The Shining scares women more than men. I think because he's her husband, remember? The person she's supposed to trust.
This is Halloween, pumpkins scream in the dead of night. This is Halloween, everybody make a scene, trick or treat.
Till the neighbors come and die.
I was clicking around last night and saw this movie on one of my options. Rotten Tomatoes, I forget what the score on this is. It's in the 90s.
I love this movie when it came out.
It really was so unique. And, you know, he's since duplicated that style in other films, but I love this movie. Happy Halloween to all of you from all of us at WGN Radio. Wait until you see or hear Rokan's show. Wait, it's disruptive. Nothing is being accomplished right now.
I think it's a very successful Halloween so far.
Well, it wasn't when Steve just picked it up out of a spot a moment ago because all of us were playing in the halls instead of doing the show.
Well, I did the same thing to you. I had my mic open and was talking. You know, all of a sudden he walked in the newsroom and it was like jaw-dropping.
This is Halloween.
So we used to watch a movie every Christmas when Sharon and I were just married or engaged, and you know, we'd watch a Christmas movie on Christmas Eve or whatever.
Yeah,
I'll never forget, my mother-in-law came into town from Arizona, and we're like, this is a great tradition, join us, and we watched that movie.
Which one? This is Halloween?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Halloween Town, is it called, or what's it called?
Yeah, Halloween Town.
And because it was about
pumpkin.
Christmas, too.
No. You're thinking about The Day Before Christmas.
The Day Before Christmas, yeah.
Halloween that's the Town's one. Another one that's okay. About Halloween.
Well, that song was from The Day Before Christmas, right?
Hey, Producer Ella, if you need to help us out here, where's
anyway,
that song?
It's The Nightmare Before Christmas,
That's
what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I thought it was The Nightmare Before Christmas. That's the one we're thinking of,
well,
Steve.
Let's just say my mother-in-law didn't consider it a very good Christmas movie. That's the story.
The Nightmare Before Christmas. John, the scariest movie of all time is Amityville Horror because it's a real house with a real haunted past.
And real flies.
John, staying in a Washington, D.C. Hilton, told it was haunted. That night, in the middle of the night, I heard a click, and the light in the other room turned on. A few minutes later, I heard a click, and the light went out. Scared the bejesus out of me.
Lights!
Could not get up to check it out. John, I still can't watch Rosemary's Baby. If you ask normal people, they'll all say The Exorcist is the one that made them rethink their life on Earth. The Exorcist is the one. And that scene where she climbs up or down the stairs, upside down, backwards, like a spider, that was not in the movie because it was seemed to be too horrific. You watch that as an outtake, and that's pretty amazing. That is, Elif, you should not watch that.
Thank you.
Chicago-based Transit Tees, that's a company, has launched a game called Loop, the elevated card game. Loop, the elevated card game. Tom LaPlante is the guy that essentially did the artwork on this. And I don't know, did you do the words? Did you come up with the stuff on the cards?
Too, oh,
Tom?
Yeah. Definitely so. I pretty much did all the design, all the copy, and all of that. It's very much inspired by the signage you see on the CTA, just riding the trains and stuff.
Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's my pleasure.
Is that the mustache you always have, or is that for Halloween?
Oh, it's always.
It's very, I don't know, 1890s-ish.
I suppose it might be, yeah.
You could be a pitcher for the Oakland A's in the 1970s with that.
I'd do my best.
Yeah. So welcome to the show. So you guys, we saw a story about this in the paper the other day, and as a recent transplant to Chicago, who takes the L every day, I'm like, oh, these are my people. This is my experience.
Yeah.
So how does this game work? What is it?
So it's a game that it plays very similar to, say, Crazy Eights. So I think it should be easy for a lot of people to just kind of pick it up and play.
Or Uno, right?
Yeah, very much so. So you're matching the colors of the station, of the lines, or the names of the stations themselves, the same way you match suits and numbers in Crazy Eights.
Yeah,
and
right.
Basically, you have a hand of cards, and you're just trying to discard all your cards first.
And there's ways that you can get rid of some, and there's ways that you can gather more than you want.
That's right.
So if you get a bad card, then, oh my gosh, something bad happens. So what would be an example of a bad experience on the L that's going to require me to get more cards?
Oh, well, most of the cards you play that causes you to draw cards are cards you play on other people, of course. But, for example, one of my favorites is the Sat in Puddle card. That's definitely a bad day.
Sat in Puddle
and
card.
An opposite one would be give
and,
you...
Yeah, so that would be that one's a draw four, basically.
Wait, hold on. Go ahead, V. V, you were going to say what? And an opposite?
Oh, the opposite of that would be give your seat to an elderly person. So that's when you give two cards to someone because you did a nice thing.
My experience is that people on the L, if they see, and this happened to me again yesterday, place is packed, everybody's standing and sitting in every available seat, and a couple of older gals get on, and by that I mean somebody over 40, and right away, two guys just stand right up. You know, and these ladies were actually, like, I'm going to guess, in their 70s. And they were very funny, too, because they didn't ride a 75-year-old woman does not ride the L the way a 25-year-old does. if she's on with her friend Mary, she goes, Mary, hi, look at this sign on the side of the thing. I'll bet Ed could use this, and it's some product or service that's advertised on the interior. And her friend is sitting nowhere near her, so they're having this loud kind of across-the-car conversation, and they did not care that the rest of us were hearing it. I guess young people sometimes engage in loud conversations, but they just seem to have a whole different experience with the car and the passengers than the rest of us do. And it was charming. I love these ladies. But I just like the fact that everybody stood for them.
Yeah, that is a good feeling. There's another card in this game called Rush Hour Crowd. The train is packed so tight you can't move. Avoid eye contact with the next player. Draws one card from your hand.
Is there one where you get penalized because you touch somebody in a way that you should not because you're so packed under the card?
Well, I think the closest one to that would be the man-spreading card.
Oh. That is... By the way, that
that's a thing.
It totally is. What is man spreading?
So in the context of the game, basically you give one card to the person on either side of you. So, yeah, you're kind of spreading out a little
bit. Like your knees. Man spreading is where a guy takes two or more seats because he's spread his
stuff. He just sits there all manly.
Personage out. And by the way, I forget what it was. There was an article in the Trib not that long ago about people who wear their backpacks onto the L. And it was a big issue. And I rolled my eyes at this and said, oh, you've got to be kidding me, people. They said, no, you're supposed to hold your bag at your feet and not wear it on your bag. And I was poo-pooing the urgency of this. Producer Elif goes, no, that is the worst behavior on the L. Am I misrepresenting you on this?
It's one of them. It's one of the worst behaviors.
And recently I've come to appreciate your view on this. Yesterday I got on the car and you literally could not walk down the aisle where there was plenty of room to stand because this one girl, not very large lady, but doggone it, her back went forever because she had this gigantic backpack. And she seemed to be oblivious to the fact that she was really two people standing there now and you couldn't get around. So you had to kind of shake her and her backpack and move it around to get by her. It's a pet. It's now my official pet peeve on the L, Elif.
S-M-H.
Yeah. I actually don't know what that means.
It's shaking my head.
Oh. So about this card game, so how did they come up with all these creative things is what I'm wondering.
Yeah, so is this just your experience or the staff? Like, what are the pros, the goods and the bads?
Certainly some of these are mine, but we definitely collaborated and everybody was sharing their own terrible or great experiences riding the train. So, you know, we all contributed a little bit, I think, to this game.
Now, what would you call this card here? What kind of card is this?
So that's called an event card. And those are all the cards that are neither just like a station card or like a free transfer, a wild card.
Yeah, this one says express. The train zips by. Hope you weren't trying to go anywhere in a hurry. Next player skips turn. So is that good for the next player or good for me?
Well, it's okay for you, but mostly it's just bad for the next player.
Right. Although, that's the thing where you see the light. This happens with Metra, too, where you go, oh, good, here comes a train, but whoom, it goes right by.
Yep.
Sometimes they've loaded and gone, and they don't even make the scheduled stops.
Or you're passing your exit, and you're like, oh, that's where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah, I hate that. I think that's more an experience with Metra than the L, where you fall asleep on the train and you wake up having missed your stop. Does that happen on the L much?
I used to fall asleep all the time.
On the L, really?
I've never personally fallen asleep on the L, but I have gotten close.
Well, to do so, you almost certainly have to get a seat. And I would say, I don't know, V, what's your experience? What's your experience, Tom? How often when you ride the L are you sitting, and how often would you say are you standing?
Well, I live up in Andersonville, so I catch the Red Line pretty far up north, so I do usually get a seat if I'm trying to ride.
Coming down, you do.
Right,
but if you're heading up and picking it up downtown, it's catch as catch can.
Yeah,
right?
Pretty much, yeah.
And what's the most that either of you have watched a train open its doors in front of you, there's no room, the doors close, you couldn't get on, you wait for the next train. What's the most number of successive trains you've had to watch before you were able to get on? I've set a new personal record.
Really?
Four. A couple of weeks ago, it was at Grandin. Is it Grandin State? Is that where you and I get off usually, Olive? And train couldn't get on. Train couldn't get on. Train couldn't get on. Train was able to squeeze in. Wow. That's got to be fixed. Somebody needs to do something about that. And I don't know what the solution is, because you can't put more train cars on, because... The train cannot be longer than the platform, right? So you really don't have any more room. I guess more trains. Just get another train following that one as quick as you can. But that's another guy. It's shame on me. All I'm doing is complaining here. I like my L experience. I think they, can I say this? Having said all of that, I think they do a good job. That is, people are using it, right?
Yeah.
And it does get you where you're going. And it's usually, quote unquote, on time. I never have to wait long for an L on the red line in the morning or afternoon. Anyway, so these cards are kind of living around that experience, right?
Definitely so.
How much does this game cost?
It's going to be $20.
And I buy this where?
So you can find it at transittees.com. We also have a couple of retail locations, one in Wicker Park and one in Andersonville.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What else should I know about this game? Anything else?
Oh, there are definitely some strategies to playing if you want to get into those.
Like what?
For example, when you're down in the loop, there are a lot of... So each station basically is served by more than one line. So if somebody plays, for example, State and Lake, if you are holding more than one State and Lake card in hand, you can play all of them at once because you're essentially at that station right now.
Right, right, right. So it literally marks out the stops and around the loop. Is it the whole system or just the loop?
It's just the loop. We thought about doing a game that involved the whole system at first, but that would be hundreds of cards. It would be kind of an unwieldy game. So we just pared it down to the loop because there are lots of overlap there, lots of opportunities to transfer. Yeah, and it's a much more manageable number of stations.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, if you play Crazy Eights, if you played Uno, this sounds like an easy enough. In fact, the directions are printed out on a little card, and it's very easy to see and understand. If you've got somebody that's in the city, this is a perfect stocking stuffer or gift for them. We like it here. In fact, we've got a couple of them to give away. Let's do this. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And do callers number 10 and 11. Let's give one of the games to you, and you can share it with your friends. Hey, listen, good for you. And so to buy my own set, though, I go to transittees.com.
That's right.
Spelled T-R-A-N-S-I-T, transit, and then T-E-E-S, as in T-shirts, transittees.com. Yeah, nicely done. Nice to meet you. Congratulations.
Thanks. I'd also just like to mention real quick, we are having a launch party for the game on November 15th at our Wicker Park location. There'll be food and drink, so come on by. We'll be teaching the game.
November 15th, learn, play there, huh?
That's right.
TransitTees.com to find out more. Congratulations. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
My one-time producer and our still weekend host, Matt Bubala, has called in. Hi, Matt.
Hey, John Williams. How are you?
What's up, buddy?
Boy, listening to that commercial at the tender age of 46, I'm thinking, I ache.
Well, then you should have 000, as in zero pain. You should go to their location in Oakbrook.
I agree.
That'll be closer.
I think I might be doing that,
We
too.
Need them to get one out in Dundee, in the greater West Dundee
nice.
Area. Yes,
absolutely. Let's do that.
You guys, I have an important announcement to make. Matt's going to make a musical request. Pay attention, Producer Elif.
Has this seriously not even been played yet, this whole holiday season?
You've been listening in and out. I took a week off. Last week I was on vacation. Then I come back this week, so I haven't been around as much for the month of October as I usually am. And not had the chance to play the Shags as much as I usually
do. You are slipping.
But I have featured some Shags music this week, but maybe not while you were listening.
But not It's Halloween? Like a different song?
No, I played It's Halloween a little bit.
Oh, you did play. Okay, all right. Well, I haven't had a chance to hear it, and I was kind of like going through withdrawal. Because at this time of year, the John Williams Show usually pays great homage to the Shags.
Homage?
Homage? We don't say the H?
I don't think we do.
Homage?
John, I ache. I can't be held accountable for everything.
All right, Elephant, 3, 2, 1 for Producer Matt. This one goes out to a family of six at West Dundee.
It's Halloween, it's Halloween, it's time for scares, it's time for screams.
And then I usually find myself just shutting it off in midline because even I can only take so much of it.
It's like there's different timelines of the world. They would have like somehow had a role on Making a Murderer, I think, had they been born 20 years later.
They would have killed their dad? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't know. I just see them and the Averys being related in some weird way.
Yeah, well, they were an odd and dysfunctional family, and the father had a vision, or the grandmother had a vision that her son would have children and they would be a popular musical group. And when her son had those girls, he did essentially homeschooled them, kept them in the basement, and made them learn to play instruments, and that became the Shags.
I didn't know the mother. I didn't know the grandmother part of that. I knew the dad was like a weird, Father Jackson.
He was living out the mother's vision, and so he goes, "All right, girls." So he put them in county fairs, talent shows, stuff like that, and they'd get some blue ribbons, but. No, that's what they were.
So does that make you like the music more?
I have always had sympathy for these girls. I have always had a warm spot in my heart. And not all their songs are about Halloween. I mean, they have one about Fufu the cat. so enjoy
But that
this.
May be the greatest Halloween song of all time because it's unintentionally very freaky.
It's totally freaky. It's totally freaky. I'm totally out of time. Are you on this weekend, Producer Matt?
Yes, sir. I'll be on at 1 a.m. Saturday morning.
All righty, buddy. Hey, thanks for calling in. I'll talk to you and see you later.
Bye.
That's just a special request from producer Matt. He wanted to hear some Shags. And so there is that. Hulk Hogan, and I haven't seen Anna DeVlantis.
Well, Flamingo. I'm a Flamingo today. So, yeah, and Hulk is doing a little bit of a costume change because he had a lot of green stuff going everywhere, so there was a shower.
And I think that's Hulk Hogan. That's a whole nother Hulk.
Yeah, no, he's not Hulk Hogan, the wrestler. He's the Hulk.
The green monster thing.
The green Hulk.
And so as a, are you all pink then? Is that what you're doing?
I've got a feather boa on, yeah. Yeah, so it's kind of a family costume that my daughter's wearing her little flamingo thing today, and I've got mine, so I'll join them
nice.
In progress trick-or-treating after the show tonight.
Oh, good. What are you guys doing today?
We have got a lot coming up today. We've got a special WGN investigative report that Ben Bradley is going to talk to us about a suburban police chief. We've got, your trick-or-treat forecast. Skilling's going to let you know when exactly the window is that you're going to want to get out with the kids. And look, Hulk is back.
Oh, my gosh.
Not green anymore, Ro.
No.
You've completely removed all traces of green.
No.
No?
No,
actually,
there's a lot of green between my toes and my ears.
You still have eyeliner on, so you got that going for you.
I have a lot of eyeliner. It's all of a sudden I went from Hulk to Ozzy Osbourne's grandfather.
Yeah, or a member of KISS, the band. You still got a lot of makeup on.
Yeah.
By the way, Wendy, Bill and Wendy today, Wendy was dressed as Ozzy Osbourne well. You were like, oh my God, Ozzy is here. She totally hit it out of the park.
Love that.
Wow, that's awesome.
Love that.
That is awesome. So, well, thank you all for accommodating me.
The first time I used the shower. Would not be out of breath for changing clothes.
I showered. I think we have a shower here. Did you know that?
I did.
We have two showers.
The other day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in there, and it's a little creepy. I'm not going to lie to you.
How much soap did it take to remove?
Not enough.
The green.
I mean, I kept going over and over and over. I couldn't see where it was. I went out to the shower. The whole thing's a mess. So thank you, CLTV. We appreciate your service. And I'll try to get through this, even though I look a little bit like I just got off stage at the Baton Club.
I think it looks great.
Yeah.
I like the eyeliner look. The guy liner.
The guy liner? Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay, good. I'm glad.
You got rid of the lipstick, most of it. But.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of green. There was a lot of green. So I want to thank everybody at Mighty Artist Productions at Windy City Live for putting
awesome
all that
job.
Together for
yeah,
us.
I was advertising that folks could tune you in on CLTV and see it, but I presume there'll be pictures up on your social?
Yes, we did. We took a picture right before, all of us together, except Anna. We're going to have to Photoshop her in.
Oh, you can Photoshop
her in. We took like 40 pictures. It was a long process.
We took two, and he thought it was 40.
We did not do good radio today because we were all in service to our costumes.
It's Halloween, people.
Bye now. See ya.
Bye.
See ya, John.